Bill Withers, Lovely Day. Hi, this is Charles, democraticfundamentalism.org. For those of you linking in from other websites, want to welcome you in, democraticfundamentalism.org. We've got links, by the way, on this broadcast so that you can go out and check the full stories from other news sources. Just look for the report of the News in Review. As I always say, you don't have to take my word for anything. I don't have to make this stuff up. Well, I don't know why. It just seems to me there's been a fundamental shift in the world today somehow. I can't really explain it. Just sort of a peacefulness about it. Still, I ran into a little odd synchronicity that occurred as if the universe was rubbing something in my nose. It was painful, but enlightenment is rarely gained without a struggle. Some great news about Iraq. They've chosen to accept inspectors without too many conditions, as well as a great deal of propaganda. A couple of things I want to warn you about, and of course some fun notes about entertainment. Keep your eye out, by the way, for Charlie Chaplin on the Turner Classic Movies channel. First quote for the day, maybe a couple. Yeah, probably a couple. I love quotes. This one from Samuel Johnson. It's from his Daily Journal for Friday, April 7th, 1775. He wrote, "Patriotism is the last refuge for a scoundrel." Dare I go into the significance of that one? All right, I will, just a bit. Right now we have congressmen in Iraq looking the situation over, trying to get a first-hand look at what's really going on in Iraq and reporting back to the American people on what they find. A great deal of what they've found has been a great number of children and citizens who have died because of the sanctions placed upon them because of the Gulf War. Now, I bring this up not just because of those facts, but to remind you that the Republicans, in general, are accusing the Democrats of using the Iraqi situation to politicize it, like to win the elections. Well, then we come up to this headline, "Lott Wraps U.S. Congressman in Iraq," and listen to what he says. He says, a congressman who questioned, or this is the story, a congressman who questioned to Al-Qaeda terrorist networks should come home and keep his mouth shut. That from Senate Minority Leader Trent Lott on Sunday. Representative Jim McDermott of Washington, he's a Democrat, is one of three House members visiting Iraq to urge Iraqi officials to avert war by allowing UN weapons inspectors back in, has acted irresponsible, Lott said. It makes me wonder what it would be to be responsible, like, you know, bomb them first and ask questions later. Anyway, he went on, for him to be in Baghdad, the center of one of the most dangerous dictators in the world, with all kinds of weapons of destruction, to be questioning the veracity of our own American president is the height of irresponsibility. He said he needs to come home and keep his mouth shut. McDermott said President Bush's goal of ousting Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein has overshadowed efforts to get Iraq to give up weapons of mass destruction, which Baghdad denies having. He also questioned Bush administration officials' recent contentions that Iraq and Al-Qaeda are linked. Why do they keep coming back to this issue and keep trying to hook their Iraqis into that? McDermott asked on CNN's Late. My question really is, why do they want the regime change? I would much rather have disarmament here, and what they're doing is really setting up to throw out Saddam Hussein. And remember, Russia, China, and France say they think military intervention is unnecessary. Meanwhile, back at the White House, the statement, Iraq can't be trusted, pointing to the shoot-down attempts by Iraqis of American and British jets. And of course, this will bring us the Bushism of the day, brought to us by my buddy Don Rumsfeld. Sorry, Don, just doing my job. He said, unfortunately, Iraq's behavior over the past decade requires that thoughtful people measure Iraq by its actions as opposed to its words. Now, remember in my book, Bushism is when they say stuff that, you know, they claim about other people that's more true of us. And in this case, it would read, unfortunately, America's behavior over the past decade requires that thoughtful people measure America by its actions as opposed to words. Now, the thing that makes me suspicious is that Rumsfeld says Iraq has fired upon American and British jets some 67 times recently. Okay, so the question is, if they fired 67 times, what were they shooting at? It makes me think, well, excuse the hypothetical upon hypothetical, please, but it makes me think, there must be something for them to shoot at. I said long ago that our forces would prod and poke at Saddam's military in order to provoke Iraq into taking action, in order to make it look like Iraq was the aggressor, and then give the administration the authority to take military action with or without congressional approval in the guise of national security. It's just like Pearl Harbor when we knew an attack was coming and allowed it to happen. And it's just like the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam when the government claimed that enemy forces attacked us, when the fact was they only attacked us in retaliation for two previous attacks by our forces. But it was enough to get us to go along with a war that no one wanted. History does indeed repeat itself. By the way, if you really want to get the full scoop on what's going on in Iraq, then I really highly recommend that you watch a program called Showdown Iraq, anchored by CNN's Wolf Blitzer at Eastern Time. It's really great in-depth coverage of the conflict with the latest news and talk from around the world. Wolf does great. He's really, really good at the subject. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, Bush rebuffs Congress on Jerusalem. This is an interesting story. Don't know where this will go. President Bush signed a State Department spending bill Monday, but said his administration was not legally bound to follow a provision in it that requires the United States to identify Jerusalem as Israel's capital. U.S. policy regarding Jerusalem has not changed, Bush said in a statement after signing the Foreign Relations Authorization Act, which gives the State Department more than $4 billion for its programs across the globe. Congress has repeatedly urged successive administrations to consider Jerusalem the capital of Israel and to move the U.S. embassy there from Tel Aviv. This year's requirements, however, went beyond previous calls by adding others that affect how the United States views Jerusalem, and which could inflame tensions with Arabs and Muslims. Now, Israel made a gesture to Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat on Sunday, back tanks and equipment from Arafat's office, the only building left standing in the leadership's compound in Ramallah. Arafat was at least a little defiant by proclaiming that the pullback by Israel was a show and not in compliance with UN resolutions. Let's hope that Mr. Arafat has recognized that this is a moment in time when he has the opportunity to lead his people in a way he really hadn't been faced with before. In the past, the Palestinian struggle has been delineated by the use of terror and propaganda and defiance, not unlike any other government defending its people or making a case for war. But let's imagine for that he recognizes the opportunity he has to unify his people by using their show of support for him when they protested in the streets, and he declares peace. And when he does, he explains to his people that what he always had in mind was a nation of his people who could have the opportunity to flourish, just as all other people desire. And then they all pledge together to turn a new leaf in this new millennium to work for peace through a peaceful movement. That's quite a bit to imagine, but like I always say, it never hurts to speak it into existence. You never know, maybe the word will get around. Well, in the areas of the budget, boy, that's one we don't like to think about too much. President Bush signed a measure Monday providing emergency funding to keep the federal government running through Friday. The move will likely have to be repeated because supposedly, as the story goes, Congress has not passed the spending bill for the fiscal year that begins Tuesday. The resolution provides appropriations for continuing projects and activities of the federal government, Bush said in a written statement. It ensures that the government operations continue without interruption at their current operating level, creates no new programs, and contains no increases in spending. It sounds like the domestic policy. It does. The issues about the government, by the way, are not what they seem. The rules are over whether the federal government should spend more money on war efforts or if it should be more responsible to the welfare and prosperity. When George and company come on TV and say things about improving the image of corporations, they say all the right words, but they don't actually do anything about it. The stock market continues to crash, and little is done to strengthen confidence in the markets. Thousands and thousands of people laid off due to the slumping economy will run out of unemployment benefits soon, And, you know, when you think of the overall world situation and the viruses and the bugs and stuff that we're having to deal with, here's another report that makes it even more difficult to understand why government has the policies it does at this time. This report about the HIV epidemic, it says that the number of cases of people with HIV could triple by 2010. The story from CNN, by the end of the decade, the number of people infected with HIV in Russia, India, China, Ethiopia, and Nigeria could more than triple, far exceeding the number in Central and Southern Africa, the current epicenter of the worldwide epidemic, that according to a government intelligence report on Monday. Looking at AIDS as an African problem will be at odds with the reality of the disease, said David Gordon, former National Intelligence Officer for Economic and Global Issues with the National Intelligence Council, which carries out midterm and long-term strategic thinking of the CIA and which prepared the report. At present, these five countries combined have between 14 million and 23 million HIV-positive residents. We fear that number could climb to between 50 and 70 million by the end of the decade, Gordon said. It's kind of scary. Reports say that one-third of all streams, rivers, and lakes are polluted to the point that they are unsafe for swimming and fishing. Fires still burn in Southern California and Morgan Hill, California. More and more West Nile cases are being reported, and it looks like it will be a year before an accurate test is found for the disease, and 3 years before the possibility of a vaccine. Several more HMOs will be dropping Medicare coverage soon because of low level of reimbursement and other things for services provided. That will leave thousands without medical coverage. Remember, this is not a story about some old people you don't have to worry about. If they're receiving such poor care, what kind of care will you get when you retire? Think about that. The thing I find most interesting about what's going on in Republican strategy is to label anyone who disagrees with Bush or does anything to promote peace as unpatriotic. It's just crazy. From what I've seen, the Democrats are the ones who are more concerned about the issues that affect the lives of everyday people like you and me. I really think someone should sing their praises, because the Democrats really stand up for people. I don't mean to be giving them a free commercial or anything, but I am a little outraged that the Republican leadership is resorting to such negative, divisive propaganda to force a war on Iraq that few people want, agree with, or other countries who believe it's necessary. The American people will begin waking up to the fact that this administration simply wants to go to war and isn't concerned about the domestic issues that are undermining our way of life and threatening our families. At least Chuck Hagel continues to stand out as a voice of reason in the Republican Party, calling on everyone to actually think through and plan what's being proposed. This would include not only how to wage a war, but also what to do after the war is over and we supposedly have to build a new government. How much does it cost? How long will we be there? How many people will die? They're all valid questions. I love this guy's name, Chuck. The lockout of the dock workers, no one, depending on how you look at it out there on the West Coast, well, this is just another effort by the Bush administration to break the back of unions in order to make better deals for corporate interests. It's the same issue holding up the budgets in Congress. Budget priorities are subjective. Bush thinks it's better to spend $200 billion on a war we don't even need, while Americans will soon begin losing even more jobs and benefits. Whatever happened to leaving no child behind? And the truth is, for over 6 weeks, it's been pretty common knowledge that officials intended all along to use military forces to replace dock workers in order to force workers to accept lesser terms. We'll see this drama unfold over the next week. You just watch. Speaking of dreams unfolding, just like the movie Fahrenheit 451, a common thing to occur in the United States or anywhere where a government tries to convince its people to do things it doesn't want to do, be on the lookout for people calling on more banning of books and book burnings, happened at the time of the Vietnam War, too. People get scared and they do hysterical things, thinking it will give them less to be afraid of. Let's see. Yeah, let's go back to quotations. I really do love quotes. You know how I always talk about hindsight is 20/20, and then, you know, how people discount anyone who dissents from the seemingly popular view that's all charged with emotion and false nationalism? The thing I love about quotes from people in our history really does have to do with passing down national heritage through the eyes and wisdom of people who've been there before, done what needed to be done, and then had the courage to reflect on the events they endured and spoke of it in public, offering what I think is a real gift, the benefit of hindsight before actions are taken. That's experience. That's heritage. That's sound advice from one who believes in the idea of keeping America true to its values. That's why I picked this other quote by Adlai Stevens in a speech he gave in New York City on August 27, 1952. He said, "I venture to suggest that we mean in a sense of national responsibility which will enable America to remain master of her power, be in wisdom with self-respect of all mankind. A patriotism that puts country ahead of self, a patriotism which is not short, frenzied outbursts of emotion, but the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime. Those are words that are hard to utter, but this is a mighty assignment, for it is often easier to fight for principles than to live up to them." I just love stuff like that. It's so refreshing to hear. As far as I'm concerned, enough said. Nonetheless, we will continue. Hurricane Lily batters the Caymans. The islands reel under the wind and rain. From CNN's Weather Center, Hurricane Lily lashed the Caribbean islands of Little Cayman and Cayman Brac Monday, and a top forecaster worried it might erupt into a major force in the Gulf of Mexico before hitting U.S. shores. The fourth hurricane of the 2002 season could threaten the Louisiana or upper Texas coast by early Thursday. That, according to Max Mayfield, director of the National Hurricane Center in Miami. Landfall is likely to be between Galveston, Texas, and Mobile, Alabama, possibly around Lake Charles, Louisiana, CNN meteorologist Chad Myers. That would put it near where a tropical storm Isidore made landfall a week ago. Mayfield said it's too early to tell where Lily might come ashore in the United States. Well, this is one of those times when we need to put our minds together and do a little more work on the weather. Like I always say, at the very least, it'll help you to relax. See, I think Lily's going to come into the Gulf of Mexico and hit land in southern Texas at about a Category 1 hurricane level. And what you can do is take a few deep breaths and imagine a top spinning around in space, then going slower and slower and slower as it spins clockwise. And it slows and slows until it finally stops spinning altogether. It's amazing how doing things like that can actually make a difference in all sorts of situations. Just imagine things to be the way you want them. After a while, they start to turn out that way. Speaking of which, I'm going to tell you about my little bit of strange synchronicity for the night before I get into entertainment news. Over the weekend, I threw one of my infamous tantrums, you know, where you get a little nuts over something insignificant or imagined, and then you act in this sort of inconsistent way. Anyway, then you add to that, because of this book I'm writing online over at the Global Democratic Citizen Union, I call it For the Love of the World. Check it out sometime. Anyway, so part of what I'd been thinking about was the difference between men and women and how men tend to always want to respond to things by being aggressive, while women always tend to try to resolve things. And that what I wanted to think about over the weekend was getting back in touch with my female side so that I would be more patient. Yeah, I'm into all that kind of stuff. So anyway, to make this stranger, I was just sitting here joking with someone about how I was going to explain on the report about how as a person, the thing I admire most about women is the thing that as a man I find most aggravating. It's part of that built-in maternal thing that women have that generally makes them more willing to express their feelings and resolve their issues. While men tend to want to perform some kind of territorial right to prove they're right or justified or in control. It really is an interesting paradox of differing ideologies, nearly opposites of each other, tempting to coexist without compromise or agreement, or a common means of communicating on a given subject. Form of dominance and some... kind of reminds you of the world, doesn't it? Anyway, to understand it, you'd have to go off into a discussion of the roles we're trained to play in society, as well as the animal instincts that drive the sexes, as well as the demands and pressures placed on people today to ignore their basic instincts in order to conform to adopted social standards. It's a very long discussion. Of course, I'll go into that in the book. Nonetheless, I no sooner get finished talking to my friend when I look up the TV and see an advertisement for CNN's Paula Zahn in American Morning, talking about the differences between men and women and how women are more equipped to respond to stress and difficulty than men, who often lose control or fly off the handle. And I'm thinking, talk about the universe lining up against you, you know? It's like, no matter where I look, I get reminded. These days it's hard for me to ignore such synchronicity. Still, I know the universe is a forgiving place, full of compassion and understanding of the human condition, and that men do offer more than just testosterone to the world. I have to say, though, she looked awfully excited to be announcing that women are better than men. It's more of that male bashing that's been going on for far too long now. I know some real good blonde jokes, Paula. I wonder if she even knows about this thing. Anyway, in entertainment news, I was talking last week about the Fifth Dimension. Well, happy birthday today to Marilyn McCoo, who is the lead singer of that group that had so many great hits in the late 60s and early 70s. She turned 59 today. Melissa Etheridge is on pay-per-view this month. Can't wait for January, though, when the Rolling Stones hit the cable network. Couldn't get this one song by George Harrison out of my head today. Decided I'm going to learn to play it. It's called Learning How to Love You. Really cool tune. And then remembered that he had been working on an album before passing away. And guess what? It's due to be released in November. That will be a great album to hear, I'm sure. Always believed he was the source of love that empowered John Lennon to be as outspoken and bold as he was. Meanwhile, Barry White, who was incredibly popular as a silky-voiced bass singer fronting the Love Unlimited Orchestra, they had the hit Love's Theme and Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Baby, anyway, from kidney failure caused by years of high blood pressure. Spokesmen say Barry is on dialysis, but is in need of a transplant. I'll definitely say a prayer for his recovery. More in the world of music, I heard the new Peter Gabriel CD. It's called Up. My gosh, it's incredible. For me, it's more like a rock opera. Back in the old days when groups like Genesis and Yes and Vangelis and a whole bunch of other groups were somewhat obscure and avant-garde, I always considered them to be the new age of classical composers, sort of like I said, rock opera. This new album by Gabriel proves that to me, at least in my way of listening to it. It's incredibly electronic with some very bold drumming, as well as orchestration mixed with tender passages. Really, it's expressing love and caring and concern. It's a very special album. I'll bet you'd love it. I was pleased and amused to see that Reese Witherspoon's new movie, Sweet Home Alabama, debuted this week and was the number one seller at the box office, bringing in some $37.5 million in ticket sales. And I have to start getting a commission for these shows I mentioned. A couple of fun movies I watched this weekend, which was about a guy who had the capability of slowing down time so he was moving faster than everyone else. Kind of know the feeling. I keep watching Lord of the Rings over and over and over. Always had this thing about exploring New Zealand, where it was made. Looks beautiful. Boston Globe announced it will begin printing marriage and commitment announcements for same-sex couples. They joined a growing number of papers across the country are proving they're willing to coexist with people of all beliefs and persuasions. Over 180 now, I believe. And I want to applaud them for being responsible for treating other people as they would want to be treated. That's a good thing. And I also think that's a good note to end on. Something good going on in the world. With that, that's a wrap. This is Charles at democraticfundamentalism.org.